Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tunnels, rockets, jets, acres of rubble, bloody children, wails of grief, and bomb shelters. We've seen and heard all this from Gaza and Israel before, but never quite like now. Social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and more are supercharging global awareness, bringing more images, more emotion, more immediacy and horror to the battle for hearts and minds, the battle to own the narrative. And everybody's in it, on it, reporters, governments, ordinary civilians. This hour On Point, social media and the battle over Gaza. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Has social media changed the way you learn about the fighting between Israelis and Palestinians? Has it changed your mind? Are you closer to the war this time? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we will hear perspectives from Jerusalem. Joining me first from New York is Roger Cohen, columnist for The New York Times, author of the forthcoming The Girl from Human Street, Ghosts of Memory in a Jewish Family. Roger Cohen, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Hi.
Hi. Good to have you here. And from Cairo, we're joined by Mona El-Tahawi, Egyptian writer, social media maven, who was one of the most recognizable liberal voices in the Egyptian Tahrir Square revolution. She herself has a couple of 100,000 followers on Twitter. Mona, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
By the way, you can find the Twitter handles for all of our guests this hour at our website, onpointradio.org. Roger, let me come first to you. How do you think all this tsunami of social media coverage, reaction to photos of emotions about this conflict is changing the setting, the world reaction this time?
Well, it is a tsunami, Tom. That's a good word. One thing has not changed. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict was insoluble before Twitter, Facebook, and all the rest, and it's still insoluble. What has changed is that the volume has been turned up immeasurably, and we're all bombarded. I'm bombarded on my Twitter feed with images and words that are vitriolic, ferocious. Each side is reinforced in its convictions in a very immediate fashion. I think one consequence of it is that it's increasingly difficult for leaders to look, let's set aside even the next day. I mean, just look beyond the next couple of hours, and you see the ends to which the Israeli Prime Minister's office, the foreign ministry, and also on the Gaza side are using Twitter feeds and Facebook to try and win the propaganda war. Whether that changes the bottom line in the end, I think, is still open to question. But the intensity of it is almost overwhelming.
Mona, here we are today on another day when, of course, the death toll is higher again. We're approaching 1,300 Palestinian dead now. Another school hit today, UN school, 15, 16 dead there, and more images, bloody images of children. Of course, we've all seen the images as well of Israelis in bomb shelters, and we've seen Hamas coming up out of tunnels, sometimes with their own video put up in social media. There's volume here that we haven't seen before, Mona, because of social media, but it's more than sheer volume. Surely it's changing the way, the nuance of how people see this.
Yes, Tom, I think one of the biggest changes and the most important for me is beyond the volume and beyond the propaganda war between so-called leaders on all sides, is that much as we were seeing with the various revolutions that began in Tunisia in 2010 and swept across over the countries in the region, including here in Egypt, we're hearing from people that we never used to hear from before. For example, a couple of nights ago, everyone on Twitter was captivated by a 16-year-old Palestinian girl in Gaza,
yeah,
who took a picture of the bombardment, Israeli bombardment, very close to her window, and said, "This is happening close to my house. I'm crying right now. I think I might die tonight." And we never used to have access to voices like that before. A 16-year-old Palestinian girl. The war on all its levels in the past, or the conflict on all its levels in the past, was always between Prime Minister's office and Khaled Mashal of Hamas office and all of that. And it really, very sadly, went over the heads of ordinary people, especially Palestinians. We rarely heard from ordinary Palestinians. Now we're seeing pictures of children, as you said, not just the gory pictures, but sometimes, you know, the non-graphic can be just as moving and just as heartbreaking. A couple of days ago, a picture that had me sobbing here in Cairo was of a Palestinian girl digging through the rubble of her home after Israel shelled it to collect her books. Now, we never used to see pictures like that immediately in that way because they were always filtered before by editors, you know, across the world. So I think it's we're hearing from people we never used to hear from before, and it's garnering amazing amounts of support, especially for Palestinians, which is why you're seeing these global, unprecedented protests across the world to say, basically, stop killing children.
Here's the sound of that 16-year-old girl. This was all over the place. Photo, you couldn't miss it on Twitter. Big eyes of a young girl in Palestine saying, "Will I live through the night?" Here's a little video posted on YouTube by a group of young Gaza residents. And Farah Baker, a 16-year-old, reflecting on the conflicts she's already seen in her young life. Social media here at work.
When I was born, they named me Farah. And it means happiness in English. But I can't find happiness while Israel is killing my brothers and sisters in Gaza. And I think it is more suitable to say that I'm 3 years old than saying I'm 16 years old. Because since I was born, I have witnessed three wars.
Three wars already. It didn't take a television network to post that 16-year-old, though some did. All the material comes out of Israel as well. Here's a young woman in Tel Aviv, Rachel, during an air raid, posted on a Facebook page called Stand With Us. The sirens start. She gets out of her car, records her reactions, social media.
I'm going to get into the bushes here and just get down. Oh, my God! Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Roger Cohen, if it's changing our sense of this conflict, you say the conflict itself is unchanging. You talk about, you've written recently in your column about the shrieking cacophony of each side declaiming its truths. But if it's changing perception of the conflict, in what direction? Where's the weight rolling here, Roger?
Well, Mona was suggesting, I think she's right, there is certainly in Europe an overwhelming wave of anger and sympathy broadly in favor of the Palestinians in Gaza, deploring, and who wouldn't, the deaths of hundreds of children and even more civilians. At the same time, I'm not sure that in the United States the perception has changed that much. There is still overwhelming sympathy for Israel and the Israeli view that any state bombarded with rockets, subjected to that kind of terror, has to respond. And when there's a response and you have a lot of civilians packed into a small area and you have Hamas militants, commander groups among them, bad things are going to happen. So I'm not sure that the basic dynamic perhaps has changed that much. But I was watching this morning these images of the Hamas commando emerging from a tunnel and listening to the cries and shriek, desperate shrieks of an Israeli soldier as he was dragged out and shot dead at point-blank range. And similarly, I've watched IDF videos of Palestinians being blown away. And it's almost pornographic at times. You watch these things, you shudder, and it overwhelms you. Whether you can then try to think clearly, and you know that's my job, I guess, and try to dissect the amount of emotion, of feeling, of images and words that you have to go through in order to try and arrive at what you really feel and think about a particular situation, I think that's gotten exponentially more difficult. And it's exponentially more difficult also, I think, for the leaders on both sides to handle this. And I think there's a sense this time around, as you mentioned, Tom, this is the third mini Gaza war, and maybe it's not so mini this time. This is the third Gaza war in 6 years, and something feels different to me It feels more intractable. It feels harder to stop. You see the U.S. Secretary of State going to the region for a couple of days with a very limited objective, just saying, let's get a ceasefire for a minute so we can start talking. And he cannot achieve that. And this feels more vehement, more violent, more bloody, more deeply embedded. I'm not perhaps finding quite the right words, but there's something about it this time that has brought to the surface all the raw emotion on either side. And where this leads, I just don't know. People talk about, or the Israelis talk about, the goal of demilitarizing Gaza. Well, what does that mean? The only way you can demilitarize Gaza that I can see is to militarize it with Israeli tanks. And then you've got Israelis trying to run the lives of 1.8 million Palestinians in Gaza, in addition to the 2.5 million plus in the West Bank. And that, in my view, is certainly not the way to go. So it's a pretty desperate situation.
Mona, we've got much more to look at in this hour, but just 30 seconds before the break, in this global battle for hearts and minds, who do you see social media favoring at this point? Is it changing the balance of sympathy?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely see from where I stand on social media that sympathy is absolutely towards Palestinians, because you might be seeing an Israeli soldier being shot at point blank, but, you know, this is a soldier in conflict, and sadly, that's what happens to soldiers. But what is not supposed to happen is children having their heads blown off. And what is not supposed to happen is what we've seen happen to at least six UN schools, which is Israel shells them as children are asleep there. So what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of pop stars, you're seeing a lot of sports stars, you're seeing a lot of people who are not politicized in the past expressing, rightfully in my opinion, sympathy for Palestinians and teaching their millions of fans. Because you have someone like, you know, this kid called Green from One Direction. He has at least 6 million followers on Twitter, and he tweets hashtag Free Palestine, and he's teaching 6 million young people about Palestine and what's happening. So I definitely see for the first time in all these countless conflicts that Palestinians are finally getting the sympathy they deserve.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about social media and how it's changing the way the world sees Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and Gaza. Funeral procession right there in the streets of Gaza yesterday. Mourners shouting as they carry small wrapped bodies of children. That from the Associated Press, but you can find all kinds of video, all kinds of emotion, all kinds of reaction all over the internet, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, on and on in a volume that's never been associated with this repeated conflict before. Roger Cohen is with us this hour, columnist for the New York Times, author of the forthcoming The Girl from Human Street, Ghosts of Memory in a Jewish Family. Mona Etelhawi joins us from Cairo in Egypt, Egyptian writer, social media maven herself, very prominent on Twitter, was also right in the middle of the whole Tahrir Square revolution where digital media played such a role. Mona, Roger, let me get our listeners in. We'll go to Jerusalem in just a moment. Bob in Everett, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Just like your guests have said, social media in real time is certainly changed public opinion against Israel. And it's most unfortunate because people do not see Hamas using the citizens as human shields or firing missiles from hospitals. Over 1,000 Palestinians dead, less than 50 on Israeli side, mostly soldiers. Israel cannot bomb its way to peace. They're simply creating more Palestinian hate against them.
But you see it tilting against Israel this time, Roger Cohen. I mean, we've read out of Israel even the kind of an acceptance of this, saying, look, we might as well go ahead and finish this operation because the world opinion is against us anyway. I wonder if the social media wave is part of what has fueled that view.
I think to some degree, yes, there's definitely, you know, when you get, Tom, you know, and I wrote this yesterday, I think, when you get 200 plus children being killed, this is a failure. This is a failure for the state of Israel, whatever else it may be. Personally, I detest Hamas. Hamas is an organization bent on the annihilation of the state of Israel. But Israel has contributed heavily to the creation of this terrible status quo involving violence every few years by, in my view, not engaging seriously enough with moderate Palestinians, with the Palestinian Authority, with the likes of former Prime Minister Salam Fayyad in the West Bank. It's extremely difficult to pick your way through the arguments on either side and decide where you want to go back to. Do you want to go back to Mandate Palestine or the Ottomans or the Bible? Mona, you know, mentioned this Palestinian kid with 6 million followers on, with a hashtag of Free Palestine. Well, what does Free Palestine mean? Does that mean the annihilation of the State of Israel? Does that mean a Palestinian goal of recovering all of Mandate Palestine? Or does that, and if so, I find that abhorrent. If it means seeking a two-state peace, if it means the emergence of a Israel within its 1967 borders and the emergence of a Palestinian state, then I favor it. So a hashtag like that is in itself potentially troublesome and confusing. So,
of course, you get hashtag communication, and then you just get straight communication. I mean, you quoted in one of your columns
recently, it's a hashtag war
Benjamin Netanyahu saying in one of his public remarks recently, comments to the effect that, that there would never be a two-state solution, which I read you wringing your hands about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, when I say that Israel has not seriously sought to engage with moderate Palestinians, has preferred to kick the can down the road, and that when you try to maintain a status quo, when you are oppressing and humiliating on an almost daily basis millions of Palestinians, you know, human beings react. When you're in an open-air prison like Gaza, when you're suffering daily indignities as Palestinians do in the West Bank, when you get knocked over the head once, twice, three, four, five times, at a certain point, you blow. And so in that sense, this situation, the Palestinian reaction, is understandable. As I said, I think Hamas is entirely negative for the Palestinian cause. It's pursuing a goal that is wrong. In my view, morally wrong and unattainable.
Yeah, we got that. And I think those positions are pretty well known. We're trying to figure out how this new player, this new factor may change all this. Mona, I want to come to you. Let me get a call from Nashville first. Jim in Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, folks.
Hi. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, just I'm well. Thank you. Just wanted to make what I think is an appropriate point here. I am not a participant in social media, but I found through this long term conflict that I became interested in knowing more about the origins of it and so forth. My suggestion here is that even though inappropriately social media is causing immediate and visceral emotional reactions from people who are involved in it, long term, the effect that this has on people depends to a great deal on how much they're willing to go back and actually make a larger effort to understand the history of the origins of the State of Israel. I know my attitude, my opinions changed a great deal the farther that I delved into the actual circumstances of the creation of the state and what has happened subsequently.
Yeah, Jim, we've got it. There's always history and there's always facts. They're not always at the forefront, especially when a conflict is on. Mona, what's your sense of how this is or is not deepening sympathies one way or another, deepening real understanding, and whether social media lead us closer to some kind of solution here or simply deepen animosities?
Well, I think 2 points. I think your first caller said something about Hamas using human shields. I also am no fan of Hamas. I am a fan, however, of the civilians in Gaza, of the Palestinians who are being blown to bits by Israeli shelling. And many of the international media who are in Gaza have said they've seen absolutely no evidence that Hamas is using Palestinians, civilians, as human shields. And, I mean, in fact, up until quite recent, up until last year, you had The Guardian and other media, other international media documenting Israel using human shields. So I think we need to get that right off the table. And secondly, that this young man that I mentioned, and this is why I mentioned him before the break, Zane from a hugely popular teen group called One Direction. Now, whatever he meant by hashtag Free Palestine, the bigger point here is that you have millions of teenage fans of pop stars under learning, no matter, regardless of how they're going to learn this, but learning about something called Palestine, learning that there's a conflict where people, their age, their cohorts are being blown to bits. And following it all on social media, it's very disturbing what kind of understanding we get. I think that what we're getting, a different kind of understanding, for example, than people in Israel get. I mean, I've lived in Israel. I lived in Jerusalem as a Reuters correspondent, and I've visited several times. And one of those times was during one of the earlier bombardments of Gaza. And I saw a very different war being covered in Israel. In Israel, the media have not, this time around, at the beginning, for the first 2 weeks, I believe, they were not allowed into Gaza. And most of the coverage Israelis were getting was a very one-sided coverage of the funerals of soldiers and of the air raids. Now, you've got 96% of Israelis, despite the fact that you have 200 Palestinian children blown to bits, only 4% of Israelis think that that's an overreaction by Israel. Now, you've got hundreds of thousands of people across the world understanding here. This is where the understanding comes in. Because they're seeing different kinds of images in Israelis, they're understanding that Israel is overreacting. And I think this is something that has been missing from all the previous conflicts that we've had because of what, the way that the conflict was being covered, because, as I said before, that you had, you know, editorializing and gatekeeping of various kinds. Now you can go straight to the people on the ground and hear from them. In 2 days, we might not hear from a lot of the Palestinians tweeting from Gaza because Israel has shelled the major power plant there. I mean, it's that simple. So if you can get to the people on the ground and you hear from them, and a 16-year-old in London and a 16-year-old in Brussels hears from a 16-year-old in Gaza saying, I might die tonight, I mean, that's a gut visceral reaction.
And suddenly social media is full of this. I mean, you've got Rihanna and Dwight Howard, the basketball star, tweeting Free Palestine. You've got Javier Bardem calling the treatment genocide. On the other side, Gail Gadot, Wonder Woman, so, you know, sending love and prayers to Israeli soldiers in Gaza. Social media absolutely alive with this, and a lot more people getting engaged in that way. I want to take it to Israel, if I may, for a moment, to Jerusalem. Michael Dehaan joins us. He's a lecturer in the Department of Communication and Public Policy at Sapir Academic College in Ashkelon, Israel. His son's currently serving in the Israeli army. Michael Dehaan, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you, Tom. Hi.
What is your sense, Michael, in Israel and beyond, of how social media are changing the world's understanding, the dynamics around this conflict this time?
Definitely, and I couldn't agree with Mona more. I think that that in terms of the social media war and the propaganda war that's currently being conducted over the social media, the Palestinians have definitely gained a huge advantage. For the same reasons that Mona mentioned, and the effect of the rockets, the physical effects of the rockets within Israel, even when there are casualties, not that I'm minimizing in any way or ignoring the casualties within Israel, the images aren't as visceral. They're not as strong, and therefore they don't have the impact that the images that are coming out of Gaza have on the public abroad. Unfortunately, though, these images are rarely seen by Israelis within Israel.
Why aren't Israelis also on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and all the rest?
They are, but they have a tendency to either filter these out or ignore them or brand them as Palestinian propaganda, anti-Semitic, etc., etc., etc.
What about within Israel, Michael? Is there a social media conversation, debate, unanimity within Israel that's changing Israeli politics around this conflict?
Yeah, actually there is. In fact, together with a colleague, we're drafting a paper which we're titling All What's Up on the Gaza Front, basically, because of the use, which has been unprecedented, of social media by Israel during the conflict at a number of levels. At one level, rumors are being spread through social media because of the media blackout that Mona mentioned before. there's very little news that's actually coming to the Israeli public themselves, and it's also being very, very heavily filtered through through the IDF spokesman, the Israeli army spokesman. So this has caused people to rely on social media for spreading rumors, half-truths, etc. For example, families were informed that that their children were killed during the conflict over social media, as opposed to getting an official notification by the IDF, by the Israeli army. Other families were falsely notified that one of their children were killed in the conflict over social media. So that's one level, and it's become a huge issue within Israel. And the other level is that the social media has become a hunting ground by the right wing in Israel against people that are active on the left and are critical of the war.
What do you mean by a hunting ground?
Names are collected by people that post Facebook statuses against the war, that oppose the war. Mobs are organized through social media to head into downtown Jerusalem to attack Arab civilians. They're organized to come to anti-war demonstrations in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem to try and attack the demonstrators.
So even within Israel, the politics can be really hit or impacted, changed, corralled by social media. Stand by, Michael. James in Columbia, South Carolina. James, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
The problem with social media is every time you see something on social media, it is a snapshot of time in a situation. And it is a snapshot that is provided by somebody who wants you to see what they want to see. You won't see something on social media showing Hamas using human shields. They won't use social media to show Hamas firing out of hospitals or storing ammunition in schools. So you're seeing snapshots of what people want you to see. It's just like, you know, during Vietnam. Vietnam was a good cause because we were fighting communists. And we were winning the war until the news, social media, got involved. Everybody saw that people were dying during war, so they got upset. And then we started losing Vietnam. If they look at the history of Israel in the Middle East, they were given that land by the world after World War II.
James, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. You start to lose me as a journalist when you say, leave it in a black box and we'll all be better off. Sunlight is a great therapy, I always think. Mona, do you think that people are getting more or less actual insight, net-net, with the social media growth, or more propaganda?
I'm quite astonished at that last caller, to be honest, Tom. Yeah, I can't believe he's saying we began to lose the war because of the media. The media is there to show you things that you are not supposed to see. The media are a watchdog that show you what the propagandists and the various...
I'm right there. Democracy has to know what's going on, but...
Absolutely. So you're asking if giving us a deeper understanding. I think, again, you know, I keep going back to this because I think it's really important, because who are the people who use social media the most? I think a lot of young people use social media a lot. And, you know, a few days ago, a very popular group called Massive Attack said they're going to hold a charity concert to collect funds for Palestinian refugees, and visited a refugee camp for Palestinians in Lebanon. Now, again, when you see that, when you see someone like John Legend yesterday basically bemoaning the way that Israel has been criticizing Secretary of State John Kerry, when you see all of those people who have tremendous influence over people who are not usually politicized, you are creating a kind of understanding among people, or at least the beginning of an understanding among people who would not normally turn on what we call hard news because they're not interested in it. Now, the way that it's been handled across different parts of the world is different. You mentioned Dwight Howard, the U.S. basketball star. He was made to delete his tweet, which speaks to the way that in the U.S., this is an overly sensitive subject, and Palestinians have not been getting a fair hearing in the U.S. In Europe, however, you have football stars like Joey Barton, an English football player, who's been very vocal, very vocally pro-Palestinian. You get other, as I mentioned, all the other famous people in Europe. So I think what also social media is doing is it's showing us that in the United States, the narrative, especially towards Palestinians, has been incredibly negative. And for the first time in a very long time, we're taking that away, the ownership of the narrative. Who owns the narrative now? It's not just, you know, U.S. mainstream media. Because what social media have done, which is what I mentioned about the revolutions, is that it has given this very, very necessary loudspeaker, used differently by various people.
Yep, Mona, we've got it. We'll come right back to it. Please stand by in Cairo. Roger Cohen in New York. Michael DeHaan in Jerusalem, thank you so much for joining us. We'll hear more from Israel in just a moment. Listeners, we're looking at social media and the Gaza conflict. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about social media and how it's changing the way the world sees Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and Gaza, right in the middle and all around the conflict underway there right now. Big death toll, lots of fear on both sides, high death toll in Gaza. The whole world is watching. All kinds of social media coming out. Here's a widely viewed YouTube video released earlier this month, shared by the official IDF, Israeli Defense Force account, among others, said to show Hamas launched rockets forcing a wedding to be evacuated in Ashdod, Israel, as sirens wail and attendees scream. Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, absolutely slammed with images like these. Of course, many, many, many from Gaza as well. And reporters talking, writing outside of their normal channels as well. Here's British Channel 4 anchor John Snow recorded a short 3.5-minute video after returning from Gaza earlier this month. Video was not broadcast on television but went viral online. In it, the British journalist described seeing wounded Palestinian children in a Gaza medical center.
That's where I saw this little 2.5-year-old with panda-sized, huge, suppurating, round, panda-like wounds that almost prevented her eyes opening at all. They were the consequence of a broken skull and a fractured nose. I can't get those images out of my mind.
New channels to the public, new people using them, old people using them, or old media using them in new ways. Roger Cohen is with us from the New York Times. Columnist there joins us from New York. Mona El-Tahawi is Egyptian writer, social media maven herself, joins us from Cairo. We'll go back to Jerusalem in just a moment. A couple of calls here. Keith in Newton, Massachusetts. Keith, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a couple thoughts. One was that I think the social media represents the utter cleave world we live in. It is a complete bedlam, free-for-all, who can scream the loudest and say the most provocative things. And this happens on both sides. I think your guest from Israel has it that the Palestinians, as usual, have a great end to this propaganda war. And the second thing was that, you know, if you look carefully, you can find what I was looking for, which was the presence of human voices on both sides telling their stories without the propaganda, without the provocation. And so for a friend of mine who lives very close to...
Keith, I apologize, but your cell phone is starting to give out on us here, and it's just beginning to break up, and I'm sorry for that. But saying that if you look carefully, you can find human voices on both sides. How do you know when it's for real, Roger?
Well, it's tough to know, but usually authentic things do have the ring of authenticity. I mean, when that Palestinian kid tweeted the other day something like, you know, if I die, I want you to know I'm not a member of Hamas. I'm not a human shield. I'm just at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that tweet went viral. It's these very simple, direct human expressions that are now unfiltered that do change our perception. And Mona is right. There is certainly a global outpouring. I would put the United States in somewhat in parenthesis there, but I think there is certainly a global outpouring of sympathy for the terrible plight of Palestinians within Gaza. But, you know, what does this change? I think we really have to grapple with that. Maybe over time, it limits the room for maneuver of the Israeli government and impels the government to become more serious about peace. We haven't seen that yet. I think another effect has been the lionization of Hamas, with the result, and here we're seeing a direct result from social media to politics, I think, you see the marginalization of Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority. So those are some, you know, direct effects of what's happened. Nonetheless, I think we have to recall, you know, one day the guns are going to die down again. Mm-hmm. One day this explosion of noise on Twitter is going to quiet itself again. And when that happens, we'll still be confronted with two national movements, one Jewish Israeli and one Palestinian, vying for the same sliver of land in the Eastern Mediterranean. And the confounding problem of how to reach a compromise between the two that leads to the creation of two states living in peace and security beside each other will remain. Once the guns die down, we'll still be there. So we
But perception surely comes into play at some point, but you point to interests, like sort of bedrock interests here in the conflict. Pew Research Center poll here, I'm just reading from their latest thing, saying in the U.S., where you're quite right, overall, support has remained quite strong for Israel. But there's a huge generational split opening up, while all age groups north of 30 clearly blame Hamas more than Israel for the current violence. Young adults buck the trend, Pew writes, in a big way. I mean, 65-plus, age 65-plus, 55% of Americans call Israel's actions justified. Only 25% of 18 to 29-year-olds, those would be the big social media users, Roger, I wonder.
Yeah, they are obviously, Tom, are the main users of social media. And obviously, 18 to 29-year-olds on the whole, even with social media, are not in a position of power. However, over time, they will be. They are the coming generation. So, you know, who knows? 10, 20 years out, how might that change the dynamics of the conflict? I don't know. Meanwhile, however, you have members of the Congress falling over each other to find more vociferous expressions of support for Israel.
Mona, if I may, I'm sorry, Roger, our time grows short. I want to get back to Jerusalem one more time. Mona, in Egypt, you have had the experience of social media, the internet being used in Tahrir Square to bring about huge political change, and then a collapse back from many people's view, I assume your own. What does that tell us about the ultimate impact?
Well, I think what social media does, and I think that we've all agreed today, is that, you know, it is very immediate. It is of the now. The actual political change takes a much longer time. But I'd like to add something that I find really important, is that we're seeing, for example, images out of a country like Syria.
Yes.
Where we've had hundreds of thousands of people killed, of Syrians holding up signs telling Palestinians, "We support you, our wound and our enemy are one." Now, this is really important in an Arab context.
But what does it mean? I mean, their enemy tends to be Assad.
We are being killed, we are being killed by the same enemy. To put Israel and Assad in the same boat like that is really important. To make those connections and say that we are civilians being targeted by these regimes, by these governments, is very important. That's not going to change something right now, but it does change a perception that is important for the future. Here in Egypt, we definitely don't have a government that I find ideal. We have the former defense minister and former head of military intelligence as president, and I oppose him wholeheartedly. But what I think we've begun in Egypt, and this is why it's important in the long run, is we've begun changing these perceptions of enough, I believe, young people who are going to carry on this struggle until we get the kind of Egypt we want. So we have to understand that, as frustrating as the distance is between the immediacy of that message from social media and the actual change on the ground, the fact that that change has begun, for me, is what counts.
I want to go back to Jerusalem. Emily Nielsen joins us right now, a student at Hebrew University, has been active in student social media campaigns. She just started a new job as director of operations at a nonprofit advocacy group called The Face of Israel. She'll be responsible for the group's social media campaign. Emily, thanks for joining us from Jerusalem.
Thanks for having me.
You're savvy. You're tuned in. Who do you think is winning the global social media battle around this conflict?
Well, I've heard you ask that question a few times, and I guess my answer might be a bit different than the norm, but I don't think there could be a winner in these situations. Everything about this conflict is a lose-lose situation, whether it's on the ground in the military booths or whether it's on the social media platforms. You said something interesting just a few minutes ago, and you said that sunlight is great therapy, and I would 100% agree with that. Unfortunately, from my perspective, as a young Israeli that does see practically all of the social media and media that comes out of this conflict, I can say that there is no real sunlight here at the moment. It seems that sunlight would be therapy, but everyone is still pretty much in the dark if they're depending solely on social media.
I mean, I've seen a lot of it coming from Israelis, coming from Palestinians, and I have to say I have seen more scenes of intimacy than I would in a normal conflict than I have in this conflict in the past. Surely that's a kind of sunlight.
Well, social media is a platform for to express feelings and opinions, and it's something that we all turn to. I mean, I turn to the second that anyone feels, oh, I just have to say something, that's where we go. And when we find, you know, the heartbreaking stories and the pictures, the social media platforms has become a tool, almost as if it's a new weapon that can be used to really sway the opinions of the global community. It helps sway opinions, and then the question is: so what do people actually see? All of a sudden, you know, you mentioned that I do social media campaigns. What does that actually mean for an Israeli like me? Why do I do it? I do it because I come across the pictures and I come across the devastation that's shown in the media, and I say, wait a second. This is a picture that is a snapshot of something, and this doesn't actually tell the real story. A picture does tell a story, but it doesn't show the entire picture. It doesn't show the whole conflict. You don't understand the deep scope of it. And on top of that, it's also not monitored, and it's not supervised. And
are you saying we should ignore the pictures of suffering out of Israel, out of Gaza, very abundantly?
Well, I don't think that anyone should ignore anything when it comes to raising awareness and education. I think that social media is an amazing tool given to our generation to raise awareness and to know what's going on around the world. My request to the world is pretty much an impossible mission. I would like to know that everything that goes on to social media is true. One of our biggest projects...
Good luck with that.
During these, exactly, you know, and so...
But that does not mean that there's not truth there alongside opinion and propaganda and everything else. You can clearly see some people genuinely posting their witness.
Absolutely. I've experienced that many people have said, well, look at the pictures. And I do look at the pictures. And it becomes an issue when I look at those pictures and I'm like, wait a second, I've seen this picture before. And then I find out that this picture, along with many, 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 many other pictures, are not even from Gaza. It says Gaza under fire, so, you know...
I take your point. That is always a danger and has been historically in social media, no question. But the attacks are going on. There is destruction. The rockets are coming out as well. There is destruction on that side. It's not as though we can discount all these images. Mia in Austin, Texas. Mia, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I will try to be brief. I began life as a United Methodist Zionist. I'm now an activist for Palestinian rights. I do see every horrific image that's posted on Facebook. I'm quite an addict now, even though I'm way north of 30. But I don't forward those images. What I forward are the posts by Allison Weir's organization, If Americans Knew, by Pamela Olson, who's written a book about the area, by my friend whose book I edited, Diane.
What's the view that you're promoting with your posts passed on?
I try to write about the most current history, the sequence of events when I answer people's posts. I try to steer people toward the larger history.
Where are you going here, Mia? Where does it take your sympathies, what you're seeing and posting?
Well, my sympathies are obviously already with the Palestinians. I feel like Israel has and has had a conviction that all of the land should belong to Israel, whereas people were living there for centuries and millennia already. So you say share it,
and it appears from what you're saying that you're passing on social media that would affirm that view of things, and I understand that. People promote their view. And we've got yours, Mia. One more, Caroline, Charleston, South Carolina. Caroline, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. What I wanted to say is, especially about the 18 to 24-year-olds, I think it's great that they're, you know, observing these things, reading these things, and commenting on these things. But the other thing is they need and have growing up to do. There's no one side that is good or one side that is bad. There's a lot of gray area, a lot of issues here. And I think they need to take everything on social media and a lot of times in, you know, all media with a grain of salt. It's kind of like the Miss America contestant that says, you know, I want world peace. Well, that's great, but if every Israeli walked out of Gaza, there would not be a free Palestine. There would still be very intense conflict.
Caroline, I appreciate your call as well. Mona El-Tahawi, if there's growing up to do, I don't know, in this social media era, are we going to evolve toward the same status quo in terms of boundaries, understanding? Does this have real-world impact over time, or is it just a lot of huge volume kerfuffle, Mona?
Well, I think several things are at play, Tom. I think that after years of what many of us in this part of the world believe is a bias against Palestinians and not hearing from enough Palestinians in the global media generally, we're now hearing that. So I think that's a positive thing, that we're hearing from more Palestinians and much deserved sympathy is going towards the Palestinians. But I think this is also a global moment where a lot of young people, especially who had been put off activism, who hadn't even considered activism or being politically engaged as something viable, they're now looking around and saying, no, I need to be engaged. No, I need to go to this protest. No, I need to learn about, you know, X, Y, or Z, and they're going to do that. And I think what it's doing to a lot of people in the region specifically is, again, it's making them question figures of authority of various kinds, be they religious, be they political or social, and saying, look, what I used to take for granted for a long time, I no longer am, because I have access to all this kind of information. Here in Egypt, we have a state-controlled media, whether it's owned by businesses or the actual state itself. It's very sympathetic and, unfortunately, in my opinion, towards Sisi. In Israel, you have military censorship and a very one-sided coverage of the war. And so for people to avoid that, you have an alternative now. What you do with that alternative, I have no control over. But you can't now say that I didn't know, because you have all of this, whether it's cacophonous or not, you have all of these different voices. And if you want figures of authority in the media, you mention people like Jon Snow and others, you know, who's their veteran correspondents. When you hear from someone like Jon Snow saying, I cannot get these children out of my head, you have to understand that something is very wrong and Israel has way overreacted. What are we going to do now? I can't control that. But what I try to do with my social media feed is to give people the kind of messages that I believe they need.
Mona, we've got it. We're out of time. Messages from all sides flying in great volume in that social media world right now. Mona El-Tahawi in Cairo, Roger Cohen in New York with the New York Times. Thank you so much. And Emily Nilsson with The Face of Israel in Jerusalem. Thanks all. This is On Point.